This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to Eco Radio KC. On tonight's program, we will be playing highlights from Saturday's March Against Monsanto rally and today's Memorial Day walk from the old nuclear weapons plant on Bannister Road to the new one on 150 Highway and Botts Road. But first, I'm naturally with your environmental news headlines. LATimes.com reports, the operator of an underground pipeline that ruptured on Tuesday and released up to 105,000 gallons of crude oil in Santa Barbara County and tens of thousands of gallons into the ocean said Wednesday that the spill happened after a series of mechanical problems caused the line to be shut down. The company, Plains All American Pipeline, said its estimate of 105,000 gallons spilled west of Santa Barbara is a worst-case scenario that was based on the line's elevation and flow rate, which averages about 50,400 gallons an hour. When the line ruptured last Tuesday, the oil seeped through the ground to a culvert and flowed into the ocean about a mile up the coast from Refugio State Beach. The company estimates about 21,000 gallons of crude went into the water. The U.S. Coast Guard said a pair of oil slicks are stretching across a combined 9 miles. Also on Wednesday, Governor Jerry Brown declared a state of emergency for Santa Barbara County to free up resources to respond to the spill. Quote, this stretch of California coast is unique in the world, Santa Barbara County Supervisor Doreen Farr, who represents the area where the spill occurred, and said at a news conference, quote, this is more than an inconvenience, this is a disaster. And Linda Kropp, chief counsel for the Santa Barbara-based Environmental Defense Center, visited Refugio State Beach last Tuesday and said she was alarmed to find little response to the spill. Quote, right now we have migratory whales, including endangered humpbacks and blue whales, she said. Quote, we also have gray whales migrating back from Baja California to Alaska, and they come closer to shore. We also have a lot of very rare seabirds and other coastal endangered species. It's a very, very sensitive, important place, and we don't know what the eventual harm will be, end quote. Freespeech.org reports, and what environmental campaigners and the people of the small town of Denton, Texas, are calling a clear example of fossil fuel interests trumping the will of local residents, Republican Governor Greg Abbott on Monday signed HB 40 into law, thereby undermining a local ordinance approved overwhelmingly by voters last year's election, which banned fracking in the community. After receiving Abbott's signature, the new law became effective immediately and now forbids any Texas town or city from passing local limits or restrictions on any gas or oil drilling operations deemed, quote, commercially reasonable, end quote, by private developers and state regulators. Though it applies to all municipalities across the state, the effort to pass the measure was largely seen as a way to combat the stunning victory by the people of Denton, who made international news in November by approving their local anti-fracking ordinance in a politically right-wing state dominated by the fossil fuel industry. In response to the law's passage on Monday, those who campaigned hardest for the Denton initiative called it a clear case of the fossil fuel industry using its political muscle to overpower the will of people in the name of profit. Quote, HB 40 was written by the oil and gas industry for the oil and gas industry to prevent voters from holding the oil and gas industry accountable for its impacts, said Sharon Wilson, a Texas organizer for the environmental advocacy group Earthworks. Though the oil and gas industry filed a lawsuit against Denton following the passage of the anti-fracking ordinance last year, that challenge may now be unnecessary due to the new law. According to members of the legal team working on their behalf, the people of Denton are not ready to give up the fight just yet. Quote, we have been proud to represent the proponents of Denton's ban, and we know they will regroup and fight back against this legislative overreach, end quote, says Goldberg. And finally, McClatchyDC.com reports, lawmakers and environmental and industry groups criticized the federal government's new safety measures for oil trains when they were announced earlier this month. Now, another group has expressed disappointment in the new rules, emergency responders. They're among the first in danger when a fiery derailment happens. After another oil train derailed and caught fire 2 weeks ago, that time in North Dakota and the fifth in North America this year, firefighters renewed their call for more training and information about hazardous rail shipments. The International Association of Firefighters' primary objection to the new rules about their information sharing requirements. But Elizabeth Harmon, an assistant to the general president of the group, also said firefighters needed more training on responding to hazardous materials incidents. The rule didn't directly address that issue, though some lawmakers have sought additional funding. Quote, "The training that's needed has been developed," she said. "This is the first step that needs to be funded and expanded for all first responders," end quote. Harmon said her group had been talking to the Federal Emergency Management Agency about making more competitive grants available for first responder training. That's all for the news. Mike, I'm going to turn it over to you.
All right. Well, thank you for that robust analysis there. A lot of stuff happening and a lot to process. So, and just like this weekend here in Kansas City, there's a weekend, a lot of people get out of town, but there was a lot going on in town, and particularly with regard to environmental actions. There was a march against Monsanto. We had some folks from Millions Against Monsanto last week, the Organic Consumers Association. So we were down there, and we recorded some audio from some of the speeches. Later in the program, we're going to hear something from today's action, a walk between the old weapon plant and the new one. And we'll hear from one of the former workers there, as well as some pieces from the die-in. And we posted pictures of both of these on the Eco Radio KC Facebook page. So we're going to start out. This is kind of the beginning of the March Against Monsanto program. I think Roger Lake is the person you're going to hear introducing Julian Carrier, who we should try and track down naturally and get on this program. He seems to be passionate about studying about the effects of atrazine here, and he's an Iraq war vet. So, well, let's hear from this right now. This is from Saturday.
So with this, we'll go to our first guest. He's a Army vet, 7 years, 1 year he spent a tour in Iraq. His name is Julian Carrier. Julian? He's going to speak on atrazine that he's done some research on. All right. Thank you, Roger and Eric and Leanne, for inviting me here. And my name is Julian, and the information I'm going to share with you today is from a research project that I did at UMKC. I'm a biology student there, and this data was collected originally by the EPA in 2010. And so what is atrazine? Atrazine is an organochlorine herbicide that's used to control broadleafy weeds, mainly in agriculture and residential use. And the primary crop that it's used on is corn. And so why are we concerned with it? There's several different reasons. There have been studied, several different effects of atrazine that it can cause in animals. It's a powerful endocrine disruptor. And it's been proven in amphibian studies to cause complete sex reversal in male amphibians. So in some studies, the researchers have found that it causes complete sex reversal. They actually have fertile females that were originally male frogs. Also, there's been mammalian studies done with atrazine, and one such study showed that atrazine increases the translational levels of aromatase, and aromatase is an enzyme which converts androgens into estrogen. So the potential concern that we have here is that since atrazine is in the drinking water, there's a potential for carcinogenic effects or increased risk of cancer. And also another effect that's been shown in mammalian studies is atrophy in seminiferous tubules in male rats. And so this would basically result in those individuals being sterile. And so another reason we care, in 2004, the European Union banned the use of atrazine from all agricultural applications. And right now, the EPA sets the maximum safe level for atrazine in drinking water is 3 parts per billion. And what I'm going to talk to you about today is going to show you how that's being observed and followed in one respect, but in reality, it's greatly, to a large degree, not being followed by the EPA. It's kind of being ignored by the EPA. And so what we found from analyzing the data, well, first of all, our hypothesis. We expected to find, from the data, we expected to find lower levels in drinking water than in groundwater. And we also expected to see sort of a background level of atrazine in the water before peak application season, which is right now. Right May, mid to late May, early June is prime application time for atrazine on crops. Right now, the farmers are probably all out with their sprayers spraying atrazine on the ground before the corn comes up. And so right now is when you can expect the highest levels to be in the drinking water. And so when we looked at the data that was published in the EPA study, it proved part of our hypothesis wrong, and it also proved part of it right. So we were very, very wrong about the part about expecting to see lower levels in drinking water. When we looked at the data, there was no statistical significance between the levels of atrazine in drinking water versus the levels of atrazine in finished water. And this was pretty much true for all the counties that were observed by the study. And I'll just a note, the study that the EPA did covered multiple states. Our focus was on Kansas. And so they would go to, the way that they collected the data was to go to water treatment plants and measure the amount of atrazine in the water before it went into the plant and then after it went, after the water was treated from the plant. And so what we saw from the data was that before application begins, levels are below 3 parts per billion in both groundwater and drinking water. When application begins, the levels rise to 530% above the EPA level. So right now there's probably about 16 parts per billion in some places in drinking water. And a lot of the studies that we looked at involved concentrations of atrazine much lower than that level. So the endocrine effects of atrazine can occur at levels much lower than what we're seeing in drinking water right now. Now, the other part of our hypothesis that was right was that you see a spike in atrazine concentrations. So there is a background level, and you see the spike occur once application begins, which is happening right now. However, there was no statistical significance between the amount of atrazine in drinking water versus the amount of atrazine in groundwater. And so, you know, that's why that was the basis of our concern. And so how are counties getting around this minimum safe level? Because there is, you know, the EPA said no more than 3 parts per billion, yet we see in May and June that there's 16 parts per billion. And the way that they get around it is they report annual averages. So because atrazine, you know, it doesn't stick around, you know, its levels are not measurable in high concentrations once application is over. So, you know, for most of the year, you have lower levels. But when you take the average of, 12 months, it gives the appearance of staying within the EPA safe level. However, for, 2.5 to 3 months out of the year, you have 530% higher levels. And so the concern is that during those months, when you have increased levels, there is significant damage taking place. And one primary concern is that because, I'm sorry if I'm, is this okay?
because of the endocrine effects.
That's Monsanto's influence, yeah. By the way.
So because of the increased estrogen levels, the concern is that it may increase the risk of breast cancer of women. Because the higher levels of estrogen keep mammary tissue at a delayed development state. And so that increases the chances of developing cancer from other risk factors in our environment. So thank you all for your time. Thanks for listening. Sorry about the mic. And
the following is a test of the Emergency Alert System, brought to you as a public service of 90.1 FM KKFI. Again, the following is only a test of the Emergency Alert System. What you just heard was a test from the Emergency Alert System. It was only a test. In the event of an emergency, it would have been followed with further instructions. Thank you for your patience from 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City.
On the next Alternative Radio.
Free thought is all about having wrong ideas. It's about thinking and outside of the box. It's about questioning. It's about not being so careful in your living room conversations and when you and Tom Paine write that pamphlet.
Robert Scheer, Wednesday morning at 9.
And we're back here in the KKFI studio. We've been hearing excerpts from the March Against Monsanto event on Saturday, and we're going to hear another piece from that by Moses Brings Plenty. This was on Saturday, May 23rd. At J.C. Nichols Fountain on the Plaza.
I think I'm a little bit too tall. I want to say good afternoon to everyone. Can you guys hear me out there?
Yeah.
I know you can't see me, that's good. You know, we talk about, this isn't about me. It's about us. This is not about I. This is about we the people. Okay, I'm an original inhabitant of this continent. My people didn't cross some imaginary bridge, whether it be dry or ice. My people evolved from this very continent. My body is made up of the DNA of this continent. Does that make me better than you? No, it does not. Why? Because it is all one planet. White, black, yellow, brown. Nobody came from some foreign galaxy. We all share the same planet. So this is an environmental issue. This is not about a physical health. It's about an environmental issue. And what is the environment? It is something that we cannot live without. It is something that our children are dependent upon for their future. And my question is, how much longer can this environment take for the hunger of economy? How much longer can this environment take for the starvation or the desire to own and possess a currency? What is freedom? Do we even know what it means to be free anymore? As long as the people depend on a currency, they shall never know what it means to be free. Am I right? I'm right. As long as we are dependent on a currency, we shall never ever take control again of our destiny. The environment is endangered. And because the environment is endangered, so is our spiritual understanding of life. When you look, okay, we're talking about GMO. I'm going to tell you who our Monsanto was. It was called boarding schools. It's the modification, the genetic modification of a plant. That plant has been modified and designed in how a man A common human being sees at being perfect. I seen a sign. Where's this man's sign? Can you come stand up here and hold your sign up here, please? Monsanto's plays God. Do we understand that?
Yes.
Monsanto's plays God. Boy, I can go many different directions with that, but I'm going to stick to one. When I look at what it means to be God, here's the number one question that I have looking around here. Where are all these God-fearing religious leaders at? Why aren't they here? Why am I here? I'm just not here for these children. I'm just not here for you. I'm just not here for myself. I am here to defend the rights and the perfection of the creator of all creation because I still believe in that. I still believe there is a creator. Whether we call the creator God, Wakantaka, Allah, Jehovah, it don't matter. It's still the same creator at the end of the day. You look at that tree. Look at all these trees. I'll guarantee you can walk up to that tree and you tell that tree, hey, if you don't come down 10 feet, I'm going to cut you down tomorrow. I'll guarantee you that tree has so much love and understanding of the creator of all creation that it's going to remain true to what it is. That to me, my relatives, is strength. That to me, my relatives, is courage. That to me, relatives, again, is love. Love. We speak of love. We speak of something we don't even know. Well, at least you are striving towards it because you are here right now today. You are striving towards that love. Not just for yourselves, again, and also for the children, but the generations to come. Each and every time we modify something, we kill its spirit. And when we kill the spirit, when that product becomes, or that crop, or that plant, or that animal, or that human becomes modified, it loses its spirit. And when it loses its spirit, it becomes without nutrition. There is no nutrition for anything no more. You look at the circle of life, and I'm going to give you an Indian understanding. The circle of life, if you ask let me ask you, who is at the top of the food chain? Anyone? Huh? Us?
Yes.
Nobody. Why? Because one day these bodies are going to return back to the earth. So no one is at the top of the food chain. That's why we call it the circle of life. It is the purity and the understanding that we are missing today as common people. It's the spiritual understanding that we are missing as common people. Again, where are the religious leaders? Where are the churches? There's so many churches in Kansas City. Why aren't they here defending and speaking up for the perfection of the creator of all creation? The one that they claim to love and admire. That is our duty as people. If we say we believe in something, we better show it through our example. The highest form of communication is what? Action. It is in the things that we do. In a Lakota way of life, we don't even have a word for love in Lakota. Why? Because it is better to show it than to speak about it. So I challenge, you know, our way of life, our indigenous way of life, is not even recognized as a spiritual way of life still today in our own homeland. But we still have an understanding of it. We still live it. So I challenge all of you spiritual leaders, all you religious leaders, if you honestly believe that God is real, then you better start making the stand against individuals and corporations that are trying to alter what God has created. See, I grew my hair long, not to show you that I am Indian. I grew my hair long to show you that God is perfect, because I still stand true to who I am created to be. I grew my hair long because I want my maker to know that I am proud. I am proud to stand and defend the rights of the creator of all creation, the very rights that my ancestors had obeyed and followed for many centuries before this uncivilized world had entered. Well, I'm an Indian man, and I'm always going to speak the truth, because I'm tired of the modifications that are destroying the beautiful planet. I'm tired of the modifications that are destroying our minds as common people, that takes us away further and further with each passing day from the understanding of what it means to be free. I want to be free. Who wants to be free? Yeah. Who wants to be free? Yeah. Come on, who wants to be free? Yeah. The only way for you to be healthy is to be free. As long as you're incarcerated, you will never understand what it means to be healthy. Mentally, physically, spiritually. And that's where we today make that change. That's where we today make that difference. We are that difference. I am speaking for those trees. I am speaking for this grass. I am speaking for the birds. I am speaking for the water. I am speaking for the land. I am speaking for the generations to come, because they are the ones who have the knowing. They are the ones who have the understanding of what it means to be a real human being. I'm sick and tired of being a human in a spiritual struggle. Today is a good day to be a spiritual being in a human struggle. Yeah. Today is our time. When the Creator created the world, the Creator did not create ethnicity. The Creator did not create race. The Creator created male and female. The Creator created you, my relatives. Again, this is our time as the people to show the world that we still believe in a higher power. And we are going to serve that higher power by being servants to the land, to the animals, to the plants, to the stone, to the water, to the children, and the generations to come. That is how we express our love. Someone asked me one day, "Hey, Mo, would you ever consider becoming a politician?" I said, "You know, I seen what they did to JFK. Yeah. I seen what they did to others. But that's not what fears me. They would never allow me to be a politician. Why? Because I'm not a fan of money. And I can't be bought. I would rather be like that tree. Go ahead and cut me down. I will never change what the Creator dreamed me to be. Why? Because again, I care about my spiritual destiny. I care about my spiritual destiny, and I think about forever. I honestly give the thought of forever that it actually deserves on a daily basis. On my way driving here, I wasn't thinking about what am I going to say. I was thinking about what can I do today to show my love to my Maker. What can I do to show my love to the people? What can I do to be a servant to the children? Some people will say I'm a spiritual leader, but I'm not a leader. A real spiritual leader to my people back in those days and those times and those moments, before there was time, they were servants. And that's what I choose to be. Don't recognize me. Recognize these children. That's who deserves it. That's what it's all for. That's why I make my stand. The best way to understand the knowledge, again, the Creator, when the Creator made the world, the Creator made everything function perfectly. It's time to get back to that natural understanding of life. They call in higher education, an individual with a higher education. Higher education, what is that? Is that the ability to invent and destroy and contaminate? Or is higher education the ability to coexist? When people look at me, they come up to me, they say, "Oh, I love how native people live off the land. Look around you. This is the result of living off of the land. My people never lived off the land. My people live with the land." I was talking to Winona LaDuke one day. Winona LaDuke is a very powerful voice for the people, all people, a very powerful voice for the environment. And I listened to her speak, and she talked about pesticides.
she spoke about herbicide. And she goes, isn't that ironic that it ends with side? And so along with genocide, homicide, suicide. So she said, I looked up the word side. Try to understand what, why was it able to fit in all of these things? Well, you look it up, it means to kill. It means to kill. And so I want to say to the children, children, if my life ended today, I want to say to you, I am sorry that I was such an addict of this corrupt system, and I lived in it, and I supported it by spending my dollar at ridiculous places. But means that I hope and pray that I will be here tomorrow. I'm going to change that. I'm going to change that so that you can be able to sit on green grass as an old woman and as an old man. So that you can breathe and you can drink fresh water, you can breathe clean air. Children, this is nobody's planet. All we can do is take care of it for every single generation to come. Not just mine or yours, but for many. I want to say thank you. Let's walk tall, walk strong, educate, and as an individual said, as Winston said, vote. Use your dollar to vote. You have a more voting right than I do. I don't have no voting rights. You do. And nobody, I'm not here to make anyone feel bad. I'm here to make you feel good and to give you a different perspective of what it's really about at the end of the day. It's about us coming back together as people and standing side by side. Not following someone, but standing side by side. It is we, one of my great brothers, Walt Puyer, said, we the people, there's more power in we the people than there is in the people in power. So let's live that and let's show it. Thank you very much and have a wonderful afternoon.
On the next, Making Contact.
It was the profit motive. Totally different way of thinking than our people had done in the traditional way.
The people of the forest, what have we become? People of the stumps.
On this edition, we bring you to Alaska's Tongass Forest, where the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act turned tribes into corporations and sparked a lengthy logging frenzy.
They don't understand that you can't just say, I apologize for destroying your social life and your families and killing a lot of people through alcohol and drugs, and it's not over.
In this radio adaptation of the documentary film Walking in Two Worlds, we meet a Tlingit brother and sister who are trying to heal both the forest and their native community.
Thursday afternoon at 12:30, right after Sprouts.
And before that message, we heard from Moses Brings Plenty. He spoke at the March Against Monsanto on Saturday, May 23rd of this weekend. Another event that happened this weekend was the Memorial Day walk between the old weapons plant at Bannister Road and the new facility out at 150 Highway and Botts Road. And we're going to hear, starting with a little piece at the old plant about 8-something this morning. We're going to hear from Maurice Copeland, who was who worked at the plant for more than 30 years. First, we're going to play this public service announcement.
On June 6, 2015, there will be a massive tar sands resistance rally in St. Paul, Minnesota. Thousands will march protesting expansion of toxic tar sands pipelines and oil trains in the heartland, as well as stand for a clean energy future. To learn more, go to tarsandsresistance.org. This is a public service announcement of 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
And you guys, Maurice Copeland, 32 years worked here. He became a supervisor, was a machinist, and he realized how dangerous the situation was for his workers.
Yeah. First, I want to say thank y'all every time that you come out. There's a lot of people that should be here that worked at that plant. There's a lot of people that are sick that worked at that plant that want to be here, but they can't be here. How patriotic can a person be that'll work in a nuclear weapons complex. And 60 years later, after they erected these plants and this network, they tell the people, we made you sick. 60 years later, they made you sick. And we're supposed to sit back and not want the body count of the Cold War. You get the body count of every war that we've ever had. I'm a Vietnam veteran. 58,000 died in Vietnam. I want to know how many of us died from the Cold War that is continuing and ramping up. The Cold War continues today from this plant to the new plant that you're going to walk to. The Cold War continues, and people will continue to die as long as we do not say anything about the body count of the Cold War. And most of us have watched that body count from our front doors because they were your neighbors and your friends. Anyone that worked at one of these complexes were subject to contamination. And we've proved that to you. The United States government has written an executive order that admitted flat out that they subjected these people to contaminants without their knowledge. President Clinton, 1999. You can look it up anytime you want, and that's exactly what it'll say. What we want for our veterans, all veterans, Vietnam veterans, Korean War veterans, and
Nonviolent veterans.
Well, really, and that is the truth. Look, there's so many things happening so fast. You know, when you have chaos, it goes right by people and they don't know that things have changed. The veterans that were subject to the contamination of these plants were the people of the United States of America. Some people never even entered that plant and were subject with the contamination from the people that worked at that plant, that lived with them, that loved them, that had them as children, and came out of that plant, bent down to pick up their little daughters, and the contaminants fell in their faces. This is the truth. This is the truth, and it's been proved right here in Kansas City, Missouri. That's why people ought to start paying attention. Why do you think they're moving all these cancer centers around here? Go to these cancer centers, talk to some of those people, and they will tell you that those cancer treatment centers are full of people from this plant right here, and it is not gonna stop. It's not gonna stop until the people let them know that we want justice. And you know what justice is? It's you protect those people that work in them places. You don't cut costs and deregulate like they're trying to get you to do. We're getting ready to be the arms dealer of the world. We're getting ready to start selling nuclear weapons to a lot of different countries. Y'all don't believe that, but you're gonna see it, and you're hearing it go on right now. These places are even outsourcing the work that goes on when they build these new plants, because these new plants are not what you think they are. When they move this plant, over there, you'll see they removed the name Honeywell. Kansas City plant operated by, it's removed, Honeywell. Get a clue, folks. When they built the new plant, they told you they were moving this plant over there. Before they even put up the what is that wall that we painted, that y'all painted out there? Somebody painted, I shouldn't say that. Somebody painted the sign. They painted the sign.
Carl Cabot. Oh, Carl Cabot, yes. He sloshed red paint.
Beautiful.
Red paint on the big nuclear National Security Campus sign. He sloshed red paint on it to represent blood.
What was that? National what?
Security.
It wasn't. It's not the Kansas City plant anymore, y'all. It's NNSA campus. Think about what's going on, folks. Don't get bamboozled and fooled.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look,
They're getting ready to demolish this plant. You know that? They're getting ready to clean this plant up. And they're getting ready to give it to you. And you're gonna go over here and you're gonna build some worlds of fun and let your kids romp around in that dirt. That's what you're getting ready to do. They've already put the regulation that there will be no 24-hour occupancy or residential services on this site. What does that tell you?
Boy, keep it going. Yeah. They're poisoning.
No. They're telling you that when they erect these things, where's my St. Louis man? When they erect these things, tell them what they're going to have over here. Tell them what they should have over here, because y'all got exactly what.
We're going to have a dump.
Did you know? Listen, I want y'all to really listen. Did you know that this site, before they even erected a brick up here, before they even made a plant, was designated a nuclear atomic energy landfill? That's what it was designated. You can look it up. It's all out there for you now. You can look it up. It was called an AEC landfill. What did they do? What do you do on the landfill? Okay, so we won't answer that. But do you think that nuclear security is ever going to tell you what's over there? Do you think they're going to ever tell you what they really did with that place? No. I can give you a hint. 1953, there was a Senate hearing in Washington, D.C., where Malcolm Ferguson, the president of this plant, back then, 1953, went to Washington, D.C., and asked for permission to build portable. Now this is really a good one. Portable nuclear reactors. You can read it.
Portable?
1953, Malcolm Ferguson, keyword, Senate hearing, you find it, where they asked for permission. Because we had already been experimenting on portable nuclear reactors. I would love to see a portable nuclear reactor run down this street right quick for y'all. And go to Lawrence, Kansas, where the Burke Hall also housed the facility to help make these portable nuclear reactors. It's a lot that y'all should take. Take from me this right here. People are dying from this plant. You're going to hear a lot of news, and you're going to hear some very, very shocking news very soon from a national official, celebrity, that visited this plant with me while we were having CAP meetings. That person had only been on the GSA side. That's all. We was having meetings. That person has borreliosis right now, today.
Thank you, Maurice. Thanks for sharing the information.
And that was recorded earlier today at about 8:30 this morning at the old weapons plant on Bannister Road. There was then a long march, and I do mean long, that went all the way to the new weapons plant, which is at 150 Highway and Botts Road. I don't know if it was somewhere in the 8 to 10 mile range. And at the end, folks, you heard Maurice allude to a lot of people getting sick and dying from working at the weapons plant by the government's own admission. 900 toxins are left in that soil on that property. And now they've built up this new plant out south. So at the new plant, after this march, there was a die-in where people would recite the names of people who have died at not even necessarily from working at the weapons plant, but at some of the other facilities on the government, the federal complex there that were non-weapons related. And so we're going to hear some of that right now. And there's a picture on Eco Radio's Facebook page, Eco Radio KC, and you can look up and see some that die-in. So we're going to hear that now. They're going to recite some of the names and what they died.
And muddy. So I'm going to just, in the driveway, I'm going to park my body in the driveway. We've got a sidewalk here. If you want to stay on the grass, feel free. But I've got Martin Slyman, who worked at the Kansas City plant for Bendix, was diagnosed with COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, asthma, and atrial fibrillation, beginning at the age of 47.
And I have Dwayne Barr, who worked at the Kansas City plant for Allied Signal and Honeywell, was diagnosed with lung cancer at age 58. And
James Marion Merritt, who worked at the Kansas City plant for Bendix and Allied Signal, he was diagnosed with cancer of the throat and tongue at age 57.
Barbara Ann Williams, a worker at IRS, was diagnosed with breast cancer at age 53.
Brenda Bonnet, a worker at the Kansas City plant for Bendix, Allied Signal, and Honeywell, was diagnosed with colon cancer at age 43.
Jeanette Johnson, who worked at the IRS, was diagnosed with colon cancer at age 41.
Danielle Thompson, who worked for the IRS, was diagnosed with stage 4 uterine cancer at age 50.
Wilda Lois Braden, who worked at the Kansas City plant for Bendix and Honeywell, was diagnosed with leukemia at the age of 74.
William Van Compernol, who worked for the General Services Administration, was diagnosed with a brain tumor and seizures beginning at age 42.
Benora J. Dries Jr., who worked at the Kansas City plant for Bendix, was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer at age 34.
Wow. Donald Blount, who worked for the General Services Administration, was diagnosed with a brain tumor at age 68.
Timothy Collins, who worked at the Kansas City plant for Bendix, was diagnosed with brain cancer and melanoma beginning at age 34.
Willie Dexter Watkins, who worked at the Kansas City plant for Allied Signal, was diagnosed with heart failure at age 32.
James Eaton, who worked for the Marine Corps Financing Center and Defense Finance and Accounting Service, was diagnosed with multiple system organ failure, seizures, tremors, and neurological problems beginning at age 53 because of nuclear weapons.
Dolores M. Riggs, who worked for the IRS, was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma at age 41.
Robin Spears, who worked for the Marine Corps Financing Center and the Defense Finance and Accounting Service, was diagnosed with fibrosis of the lungs in her 60s.
Dion Wright, who worked for the Marine Corps Financing Center and Defense Financing and Accounting Service, was diagnosed with leukemia at age 44.
Sue Fitch, who worked at the IRS, was diagnosed with skin cancer in her 50s. And who knows how many hundreds of other people are being exposed today, these days, by weapons being made here.
Harvard Yancey, who worked at the Kansas City plant for Bendix, Allied Signal, and Honeywell, was diagnosed with emphysema, thyroid cancer, and chronic cough beginning at age 31.
With hypothyroidism when she was 68.
Catherine Crosley, who worked at IRS, was diagnosed with brain and cervical cancer beginning at age 51.
Larry Grau, who worked for the Department of Defense, was diagnosed with having a stroke at age 61.
And that was recorded earlier today at the new weapons plant at the end of a march from the old Kansas City weapons plant at Bannister Road and Lydia out to the new weapons plant at 150 Highway and Botts Road. We heard a die-in with people reciting the names of folks they were representing who had contracted illnesses and in an inordinate amount that worked at the federal complex, the Bannister Federal Complex. And we're going to turn it over now to Natural E with some events.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah.
Bioswale Design and Maintenance with Native Plants has two events, one for professionals and one for homeowners. The first one is for professionals on May 29th from 8:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. And the Missouri Prairie Foundation's Grow Native program presents this workshop in conjunction with George Owens Nature Center in Independence, Missouri. And at this Native Plant and Water Management workshop for municipalities, engineers, architects, and designers, participants will learn many things from detailed information for managing water to reduce runoff, considerations for working with green infrastructure rating systems, best practices for project documentation, design approaches for ongoing maintenance, and how to move beyond gray infrastructure with native plants and water management, among other things they will also learn if they attend this event. You can find a schedule of the presentation, speakers, and registration information online. We have this event posted on our Eco Radio Facebook page. And the event Rain Garden Design and Maintenance for Native Plants for Homeowners is on May 30th from 9 to 3 p.m. And all who in attendance can learn to transform their lawn and attract pollinators with the native plant Rain Garden. And please find other information about this event also on our Facebook page. There's a Women's Ride Day on May 31st from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. And on Sunday, May 31st, women across the nation are gathering to enjoy a ride together on their local streets and trails to celebrate women in cycling. Accomplished and first-time riders are invited to join Women's Ride Day. It will be an at-your-own-pace ride, and there will be giveaways and a basic maintenance clinic after the ride. And it starts at Charles B. Wheeler Downtown Airport, which is located at 300 Northwest Richards Road in Kansas City, Missouri. And this is May 30th from 1 to 3 p.m. And it's not just the Keystone XL. Big Oil is trying to build and expand an enormous network of tar sands pipelines, some even bigger than Keystone XL, from Canada into the Great Lakes region. These tar sand pipelines, including the Alberta Clipper, along with the crude oil trains and tankers, pose a growing risk to the Great Lakes, our rivers, our communities, and our client. That's why on June 6th, thousands will gather in the Twin Cities for the Tar Sands Resistance March, the largest anti-tar sands event ever in the region. We are coming together to send a clear message. Keep toxic tar sands out of America's heartland. Fight for clean water, clean energy, and a safe climate. The march is starting at Lambert Landing in St. Paul, Minnesota at 12 p.m. and will end at the state capitol in Minneapolis, St. Paul for a rally, including speakers from across the movement. And there's a link on our Eco Radio Facebook page where you can buy a bus ticket for a ride up to this rally with others from Kansas City, Wichita, and Lawrence. And they depart Friday, June 5th at 7 p.m. and will return Sunday, June 7th at 10 a.m. That's all we got.
All right. Well, thank you very much. A happy Memorial Day to everybody. And we're going to go out as we have been with This Week in Water.
Deja vu all over again for the oil industry. That and other stories for the week ending May 24th, 2015. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin. And it's This Week in Water.
The fight over whether the federal government can regulate waterways to keep them free of pollution is heating up. The real issue is the EPA's authority over smaller streams and wetlands that flow into major waters like the Mississippi River or Puget Sound, over which EPA already has jurisdiction.
It was learned last week that the Obama administration will announce new clean water rules as early as this coming week.
Last spring, the EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers released draft regulations defining the waterways over which the agencies should have authority. But opponents, such as Wyoming Republican Senator John Barrasso, argue that the true motivation of the rules is to increase the power of federal bureaucrats.
In response, the advocacy group Clean Water Action said it's really pretty simple. All water is connected, and even kids understand that. The group points out that the health of rivers, lakes, and bays depends on streams and wetlands that flow into them.
The new rule seeks to protect about 60% of the nation's water.
It was yet another difficult week for the oil and gas industry. On Friday, a small offshore oil platform caught fire near Louisiana. As workers were being evacuated, an oil sheen about a mile and a half long could be seen in the Gulf.
It was unknown how much oil actually leaked into the Gulf. And while crews were able to put out that fire near the Louisiana coast, cleanup efforts continued in California near Santa Barbara after an oil pipeline burst.
The spill released more than 100,000 gallons of oil and could turn out to be the largest environmental disaster in that area in 46 years.
Currently, the damage is known to have killed dolphins and pelicans. Some pelicans, sea lions, and seals have been rescued.
The spill forced officials to close two popular state beaches, which could have seen many visitors on Memorial Day weekend.
The company that owns the ruptured pipeline, Plains All American, has a relatively high rate of these types of incidents, according to the Seattle Times. From 2006 to 2013, the Texas company spilled more than 13,000 barrels of hazardous liquids.
In drought-related news, ever since California Governor Jerry Brown announced that urban water users would have to cut back consumption by 25%, many have asked, what about the state's farmers? Shouldn't they be required to reduce their water use?
Now about 5% of California farmers have agreed with the state that they will cut their water consumption by a quarter as long as they will not suffer any further reductions this season.
Only a small number of farmers are involved in the voluntary restrictions, just those in the Sacramento-San Joaquin River Delta, but not those in the immense Central Valley.
However, the hope is that similar agreements will be reached by farmers in other parts of the state, as agriculture uses 80% of the water consumed by Californians in an average year.
The agreement comes when farmers feared severe cutbacks, including limiting the water to those with senior rights under California law.
Meanwhile, in Texas and Oklahoma, many weather forecasters are saying the five-year drought may be over.
During the last 60 days, many parts of Texas have seen more than 200% of their normal rainfall.
And it's expected that the summer will bring above normal precipitation.
A water company in Jerusalem laying new pipes to modernize the sewer system there made an interesting discovery recently, an ancient aqueduct more than 2,000 years old.
Originally built by kings in the Hasmonean dynasty, the 13-mile-long aqueduct brings water from Solomon's Pools, three remarkable ancient reservoirs connected in stair-step fashion that collected rainwater from the plains and local springs.
For more than two millennia, the lower aqueduct remained one of Jerusalem's principal sources of water, which is why city rulers kept the structure so well preserved.
During the Ottoman period, a terracotta pipe was installed inside the channel in order to better protect the water.
And about 100 years ago, the channel was replaced by an electrically operated water distribution system.
The Israel Antiquities Authority is taking steps to preserve parts of the aqueduct, study them, and make them accessible to the public.
And finally this week, someone is gumming up the works in Akron, Ohio. Literally.
The city is asking for the public's help in fingering possible suspects who have been dumping grease into the area sewer system, clogging and damaging equipment at their water reclamation facility that sits along the Cayuga River.
Akron passed legislation 2 years ago to regulate the discharge of fats and oils from restaurants, requiring them to install traps, plus use a certified grease hauler to remove the waste.
Officials speculate that haulers are pumping the grease into manholes in remote locations to avoid paying the disposal fees, fees they would have already collected from restaurants.
The dumping could jeopardize Akron's ability to meet federal and state sewage treatment requirements that impact the Cuyahoga River.
But finding the culprit could be difficult. The city has over 20,000 manholes in a system spread out over 860 miles.
Maybe they could increase the public's awareness of the problem by spreading the news that grease is the word.
Grease is the word, is the word that you heard.
This Week in Water is a production of H2O Radio and is sponsored by Colorado WaterWise. Learn more at coloradowaterwise.org.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Están escuchando KKFI 90.1 FM.